We do have battles.
Bring 120% every single time.
Everything's a work in progress.
Everybody on the team loves to play basketball. So.
Hello and welcome back to the phone booth. I'm your host, Tyler Pree, and I am joined today by veteran of the booth. You all know him, you all love him, Nicholas Gavio, our assistant podcast editor.
Hello, everyone.
It's just going to be me and Nick today. Everybody's gone for spring break, yeah. And we're only two losers still on campus.
So nice roommate podcast.
Yeah, so we're in the Levy Center recording a podcast. What else would a kid with spring break right on the horizon, or not even on the horizon, it's here, rather be doing at 3 o'clock on a Friday.
What else?
Glad to be
here. Nothing better than this.
It'd be a little bit better, though, if we could have some cheery news about the men's basketball team, but it has not been the greatest state of affairs the past four games. Last time we spoke, the team was on the NCAA bubble. Basically, they had to go, I think most of us said they needed to go 3-2, get a win in the Big East tournament, and they'd pretty much be in. They had the wins to do it. They've gone 0-4 since. It has been just a whirlwind. There have been ESPN articles with anonymous former players coming after or calling for the head of John Thompson III. Roy Hibbert has been vocal on Twitter backing John Thompson III. It's been a wild couple weeks for the Georgetown men's basketball program, and it all started when they played Creighton in Omaha and gave up 35 points to Marcus Foster and company en route to a loss. Creighton defended their home floor, really. Marcus Foster, as I mentioned, put up 35 points, but they got double-digit scoring from Isaiah Zierden, Cole Huff, and Justin Patton, and Georgetown was just unable to get anything going. They had LJ Peak score 23 points, and Ronnie Pryor scored 16, but outside of that, the next closest score was Jesse Govan with 12, and they got very, very little production off the bench. I think everybody thought that was okay. You know, you lose against Creighton and you still got everything ahead of you. Do you think that was the case?
I mean, yeah, for sure. I think there was pressure to win this game because, you know, if you win this game, you're obviously in a much better state, like beating the number 20 team. I think that they would have swept them, right?
That would have been a sweep against Creighton, yeah.
So that would have been big for the NCAA tournament resume, but you know, it definitely wasn't the end. Like, they didn't lose this game, and you say, oh, no, they have no chance now. Because, you know, Creighton's a good team. That's a fine loss, you know? Like, obviously it would have been better to win, but that's an okay loss. You know, just looking at the stats, I mean, you know, as you said, Peak, Pryor, Govan all scored in double digits, which usually means success for the Hoyas.
They were 10-1 going into this game, and all three of them had scored double digits.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, that's great, but you need support from other players. Derrickson, no points. Momor, no points. Agao, 9 off the bench, which is decent. Mosley only had 4. I mean, you need some other guys to step up, you know. 23, 16, and 12 is a great starting point. Mm. But you need other production from other people to be able to supplement that, and they just didn't have it in this game. They also only shot 13% from 3, which is not good.
Yeah, you're not going to win many games on the road shooting 3 of 22 from the deep, whereas your opponent, Creighton, shooting 9 for 20, 45% from deep, and they're getting to the free throw line, 10 of 17. Georgetown got to the free throw line, made 17 of their free throws, but in the end, they just were never able to mount a comeback. They had kept it close for a little while, and it just seemed like every time they cut it close, Marcus Foster decided to just score whenever he wanted to. He'd step back, hit a jump shot. Okay, so that's fine. You know, you lose in Omaha. It's okay. You come back. You regroup. You have two of the bottom teams in the Big East coming up on your schedule, and you have DePaul, who has not won at Georgetown since 1991. And the first 10 minutes of this game, first 15 minutes of the game, you're thinking, not even 15, 11. The first 11 minutes of this game, you're thinking, easy win.
You're right on the
Hoyas are coasting. They're up 14 at one point. And then DePaul unleashed a 26-9 run to end the first half. Ended up taking the lead going into halftime. And from there, on your home floor, the Hoyas were not able to come out with a win in regulation. DePaul opened up a 39-36 lead at half, mainly through the production of Billy Garrett Jr., who was just able to get to the free throw line when he wanted to. He wasn't necessarily making his free throw attempts, as he mentioned in the post-game presser, but DePaul just seemed to really, like, they have nothing to lose. They played that way, and it was almost like Georgetown was playing scared once DePaul had made their run.
Oh, yeah.
And this is this is when you hit the panic button, when you lose to a team that has one conference win. That's what everybody had said going into this game. You know, Georgetown does not have a bad loss on their resume. Yeah, Arkansas State does not sound bad, but going into this, they were 79th in the RPI, and when the committee looks at it, a bad loss is anything with an RPI less than 100. So at that point, Georgetown had no bad losses, and all they needed to do was win this game and win against St. John's, and they're still in a great position. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. What do you sense? What's your immediate reaction when you look at Twitter and see Georgetown loses to DePaul at home?
Well, you know, it obviously that's bad, but the worst part was Billy Garrett Jr. in the post-game press conference saying, you know, repeating what I think we have heard time and time again in press conferences this season, just, you know, we saw that Georgetown didn't play hard and we wanted to take advantage of that is pretty much what he said. And that's just, I mean, like, talk about the worst things you want to hear said about your team. Like, that is maybe number one. You know, no matter what, maybe you have an off shooting day, maybe you have an off defensive day, but you should always be playing hard. And it's really bad to hear that. You know, the end of the game, I mean, tied. I think there was like four seconds left. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
they had the whole court to go.
Yeah, for context, Georgetown had gotten a good look with about 10 seconds left. Govan, LJP came off a ball screen, passed it back to Govan, wide open for three. Yeah. There was nobody within 7 feet of him. He airballed short. I think he had just honestly too much time to think about it. But okay, that's okay. You know, you get back on defense. DePaul literally had to go 94 feet in the span of 5 seconds. And nobody on DePaul is particularly athletic or fast, especially not Billy Garrett Jr. He is not athletic in any way, but he does know how to use his body and how to get in the lane and score. And with 5 seconds on the clock, DePaul passed it in. Garrett Jr. passed it in, got it right back, went the length of the floor, shot a layup, was fouled by Akoya Gao. He made 2 of 2 free throws with 0.2 seconds left, and those two free throws basically sank the Hoyas' NCAA tournament chances.
I mean, just like, you can't let that happen, you know? Like, at least make them shoot a contested three in that situation. Like, if he makes it, all right, like, great shot. But you have 95 feet to defend. You can't let him go the length of the floor and get a layup.
I totally understand the idea of pressing in that time, but also I don't think you press that high up on somebody at that time. Like, I feel like
you just need to make sure they don't let the ball roll.
Yeah, and that's what John Thompson 30 said. He said he knew that they were going to get it back to him, but the team just didn't do a good job of staying in front. Either way, that was panic mode then. Then you have to start thinking, okay, now they need to win out, which includes beating Villanova, and then maybe get 2 or 3 wins in the Big East tournament, because there's no way they're getting in if they go 3 and then lose after one game in the Big East tournament. You're not going to get in the tournament. Now you have a bad loss. Okay, so now the team travels to Madison Square Garden the following Saturday, taking on St. John's, a team that they had beaten by 25-plus points earlier in the season. And we saw Caleb Johnson make his first start of the season, actually scored a season-high 11 points. 4 Hoyas scored in double figures. LJ Peake scored 20, Rodney Pryor scored 22, Jesse Govan scored 13. Caleb Johnson, who does not score, scored 11. You hear that and you think, hey, wow, we must have blown them out, right? And then you hear Georgetown committed 22 turnovers. And what's even more astounding is they out-rebounded St. John's by 7. But in the end, the Johnnies came away with a victory in Madison Square Garden. So if you want, if the DePaul game was the first nail in the coffin, this is 10 more.
Yeah.
This is bordering up every corner of this coffin. Again, immediate reactions, or, you know, what as a student, as a journalist, what runs through your mind when you see a second straight loss to a cellar dwelling team in the Big East? Well, to be fair, St. John's has done much better in the Big East now than they have annually, but this is not good in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, you can't lose this game. Again, it's just, you know, you can't lose this game. 23 turnovers. Again, you know, a lot of giving up a ton of free throws. St. John's shot 31 free throws, and give them credit, they made 81% of them. It just is another example of Georgetown's inability to kind of change their defensive mindset in in the wake of all of these new defensive rules. Like, look at their starters. Govan, 4 fouls. Caleb Johnson, fouled out. LJ Peak, 4 fouls. Jonathan Mulmore, 4 fouls. You know, this has been a theme since, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when the NCAA got rid of hand checks and totally overhauled their defensive rules. It just, you know, we have these games where Georgetown just can't adjust to those. And, I mean, giving up 31 free throws is, again, just, you're not going to win a lot of games if you give up 31 free throws.
It's just very bizarre because they only made, like, they gave up 31 free throws, but they shot 25 themselves, yeah. And they made 19. So Georgetown shot 76% from the line, 53% from the field, and 44% from deep. And you have 4 guys in double digits, yeah. And you out-rebound the other team. Like, if you had to ask most coaches, like, what are some keys? You want to shoot well, and you want to out-rebound the team, and you want to have people score in double digits. They did all of it. They just turned the ball over too much, yeah. Which has been, I think this is the second most turnovers they've had since they played Oklahoma State, and I think they had, like, 30 in that game.
38, way back in Maui. I think, yeah. They had a lot.
It was a lot way back in Maui. But, yeah, losing in Madison Square Garden, where they're going to have to play the Big East tournament, at this point, it's full-blown. I mean, there was a fan had made a Fire John Thompson III Snapchat filter,
yeah.
For MSG for this game. It was used, widely circulated on social media. You know, Casual Hoya had a field day with it.
Yeah.
And the calls have been mounting. I believe the students started a petition.
Was it after that game?
I believe it may have been after DePaul. I'm not quite sure when the petition started, but
it got a lot of coverage after this.
Yes, the controversy surrounding the status of John Thompson III as head coach really picked up steam after this one, and the team had to quickly rebound because they had a Tuesday night game just 3 days later against Seton Hall in New Jersey, mm-hmm. And again, this was not exactly the same as the St. John's game. Georgetown only had 15 points from LJ Peak, 11 points from Rodney Pryor. But other than that, they had a lot of bench production. Jesse Govan only scored 4 points in 23 minutes of action. Jonathan Mulmore didn't score at all. Neither did Caleb Johnson, who started again in his second straight game. But they got key contributions off the bench, especially from Marcus Derrickson, who in the second half scored 9 points, and he was battling foul trouble throughout. I think he had 3 personal fouls at like 15 minutes in the second half. He stayed in the game, had 9 points, 4 rebounds, really fought, but Georgetown was just unable. And we saw the resurgence of Bradley Hayes, too. I mean, yeah. His hook shot was back. I thought it was Maryland.
The first time this season.
I thought it was Maryland in the Xfinity Center last year, the way he was putting it in the hoop, 4-for-6 shooting for Brad, but just too much Desi Rodriguez and Angel Delgado. Delgado put up 12 points and 13 rebounds, notched his 1,000th career rebound, and passed Patrick Ewing in the all-time rebounding career rebounds category in the Big East. And Desi Rodriguez scored 27 points. It's hard to win on the road when you give up 27 points to any player. You know, they've learned that lesson against Creighton when Marcus Foster scored 35. Yeah. It was a close game. I mean, Georgetown had a chance to tie this one up on their last possession of the game. They were up with 2 minutes to go, I believe, and just a series of turnovers. LJ Peak really struggled to hang onto the ball as the clock wound down. He a couple turnovers there at the end. But I believe Georgetown had the ball with, what was it, 18 seconds left on the clock. They call a timeout with 15 to draw up a play. They're down 3. And what ensued is one of the most strange sequences I've seen. It was a series of 4 or 5 dribble handoffs, which ended up in the hands of Rodney Pryor on the wing, right in front of the Georgetown bench. He's, with the clock winding down, he's forced to step back and try to shoot it over 2 defenders from deep. This might have been NBA range 3, and it hits the top of the backboard, and that's how the game ends. You have 15 seconds left on the clock. That's the play you come up with, and Twitter and the fan base, which was already pretty upset, really latched onto this play and, you know, had a lot to say about it. A lot of people continuing to call for the firing of John Thompson III. The team, this loss guaranteed the team's second straight losing record in the regular season. They can still technically finish 500. I think they need to win against Villanova and then win 2 games in the Big East tournament before losing again. They can still fit. Basically, this is the first time the team is going to have two straight losing records since 1971-72 and 1972-73, the latter of which was the first season of head coach John Thompson Jr.'s tenure.
Yeah.
It's been a while since the team has struggled this mightily, and this is the worst the team has done in the Big East in it might be ever, or definitely under John Thompson III, but it may be a program record for least wins in the Big East. Reactions.
I don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, going into this game, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't watch it because I knew the nail was in the coffin of this season already. But you know, I did see footage of that last play, which, you know, oh man, I don't even know. Like, you know, I understand the dribble handoffs because, you know, you might want, like, you want to take some time off the clock, and that's a good way to take some time off the clock, keep the defense moving, but, like, it just didn't culminate in anything. Like, I understand that because, you know, you want to get the last shot, and you don't just want your guy standing out there. Let the defense stand there and wait and get set. But then, you know, you need to know, like, you just need to do something with it, and nothing ever happened.
I think people are quick to put that entire last play on JT3, but again, I'm not sure how fair that is. I think some of it was. Yeah. I think the initial idea was probably to get one dribble handoff, maybe two. The fourth, fifth ones, I think at some point, I think the players kind of just panicked a little bit, didn't really know what to do.
I don't know, yeah.
You know, you don't know where the blame lies. It's obviously a combination of player and coach, but it certainly has intensified talks of, you know, what people have been thinking about for a while. But essentially, the Paul game pretty much assured that Georgetown wasn't going to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large unless they did something really special in the Big East tournament. With where they stand right now after the Seton Hall game,
it's impossible.
It's impossible. They need to win the Big East tournament. Yeah. And speaking of the Big East tournament, the Big East, I saw a tweet recently that said there is no league that is better at fixing their results so that the most amount of teams gets in than the Big East. And this, I don't know if fixing is the right word, but it's incredible how stacked this league is, basically from the 3 seed down to the 8 seed.
Yeah.
So heading into Saturday's action, the last game, the last day of regular season basketball in the Big East, you have Villanova locked in at the 1 seed. Funny enough, this is the first year they're not going to win the Big East with 2 losses. They have 3 losses currently and will play Georgetown on Saturday. You have Butler locked into the 2 at 12-5 in the conference. DePaul is locked in at 10 at 2-15. Georgetown is locked in at 9 at 5-12, and St. John's is locked in at 8th at 7-10. So we know Villanova and DePaul are going to Villanova will play the winner of DePaul in the 7 seed. Georgetown will play St. John's in the first round on Wednesday night of the Big East tournament. That is the only thing we know at this point. So let me engage everybody and just indulge you real quick, because the Big East, if you have not been paying attention and you look up right now, it's quite remarkable. So currently at the number 3 seed in the Big East, we have Creighton, who's 10-7, who can lock up the 3 seed with a win on Saturday. Anything less than a win for Creighton could drop them anywhere from the 4 seed down to the 6 seed. So the Blue Jays basically need to win. They will be playing against Marquette. Then right behind them we have Seton Hall at 9-8. Seton Hall is 6-2 in their last game, in their last 8 games. They've only lost to Villanova and St. John's in that time. Seton Hall, funny enough, they can finish as high as the 4 seed and as low as the 6 seed. So if they beat Butler and Providence loses to St. John's, I mean, we'll get into all the scenarios later, but
yeah,
right now Seton Hall can be as high as the 4 or as low as the 6. Behind them, we have Providence, who is also 9-8 in the conference. Providence is actually in one of the most unique situations because they can be as high as the 3 seed. They can upend Creighton as the 3 seed, or they can go down all the way down to the 6 seed. There's a lot of teams stacked up in here. And then after Providence, we have Marquette. So there's 3 teams right now that are 9-8 in the conference: Seton Hall, Providence, and Marquette. Marquette is in position to get as high as the 3 seed and as low as the 6 seed. And following that, we have Xavier, who was in an absolute free fall. Yeah. I think this team was ranked for most of the season. I think most people thought this would be one of the teams that would represent the Big East in March. And since the loss of Edmund Sumner to the torn ACL, the team has been in an absolute free fall. They've lost their last six straight games. They went from ranked to now they're on, what is it, the last four? Last four in of Joe Lenardi.
Yeah, they're in a play-in game. Last four in.
According to ESPN's Joe Lenardi, they're in an 11 seed with a play-in game. They're a last four in team, losing six straight games. So at this point, Saturday is going to be wild.
It's going to be insane. Saying.
If you love college basketball, you can tune in to the Big East basically from 2 p.m. till 10 p.m., and you're going to get games that have some sort of consequence.
12 to 2:30. Yeah, first games tip off at 12, and then one game tips off at 2, and two tip off at 2:30. So
okay.
12 to, like, 5. But
absolutely. Well,
same thing.
We'll see. No, not the same thing. I'm incorrect. Anyways, so to run through the matchups for you, Creighton will play Marquette, Providence will play St. John's, Seton Hall will play at Butler, Xavier will play DePaul, and Georgetown will play against Villanova. Here are some of the scenarios. So I mentioned earlier that if Creighton wins, they'll get the 3 seed. That's what happens. If they lose, they cannot be anything better than the 4 seed. So I'm not going to run through all the scenarios.
Yeah, it's a lot.
The biggest tiebreakers it's a lot to go through. But essentially, Creighton wins, they're the 3 seed. Providence wins. If Providence wins and Marquette beats Creighton, Providence will be the 3 seed. Okay? So the 3 seed is basically between Providence and Creighton at this point.
And Marquette.
And Marquette. Marquette needs a little bit more help. Well, no, not really. If Marquette wins, they just need St. John's to beat Providence, and St. John's has beaten Providence, so there's some reason to believe there. Yeah, it's definitely possible. So we have Marquette, Providence, and Creighton fighting for the 3 seed. This is exhausting just to think about right now. I'm sorry if I'm slowing down the pace at all. So we have those teams fighting for the 3 seed. Seton Hall, as I mentioned, can get as high as the 4 seed or as low as the 6 seed. So they would need to win against Butler. A win against Butler would guarantee them nothing lower than the 5 seed. I don't even know where to start. These scenarios are unbelievable. But right now, basically, we'll leave it with the 3 teams fighting for the 3 seed, Creighton, Providence, and Marquette. Going into Saturday's games, who do you like in this one? Just as a reminder, Providence is going to be playing St. John's, and Creighton and Marquette are playing each other.
I mean, I don't even know, you know? Like, it's such a toss-up in this league, man. I mean, like, you have all these teams sitting at 9-8. You know, pretty much everyone is beating everybody with the exception of Villanova. Like, any night, anything can happen, and that's what makes it so much fun. Like, Providence has won their last 5. You know, Creighton, I would tend to say Creighton, but also since, you know, Mo Watson got hurt and then all of that other the terrible stuff happened, you know, they've just been not as good. You know, they haven't free fallen as much as Xavier, but they definitely haven't been the same team. You know, Providence is the hot team right now. But for Providence to get that, they would need Marquette to win. So, you know, there's just a lot going on here. I think Creighton will probably stay at the 3 seed. I trust Greg McDermott. I think he'll get his players ready for that game. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I would tend to agree with you. I think Marquette has they have the quality wins. They've beaten Villanova. I think they are capable of beating Creighton. I just think Greg McDermott will probably he seems to know how to get the
he's
most
a great
out of
coach.
His player. Yeah, he's a great coach. He seems to know how to get the most out of his players. But speaking of getting the most out of their players, is there anybody that does it as consistently other than Jay Wright, than Ed Cooley in the Big East? Providence is consistently everybody came into the season thinking they're going to finish 8th or 9th in the Big East. This team could be the 3 seed in the Big East tournament, and it's not unlikely. The way I see it, Ed Cooley has been – I mean, he might be Coach of the Year in the Big East with what he's doing with this program.
He might be Coach of the Year in everywhere.
Yeah,
he's on the list.
Yeah, I'm blown away by what Ed Cooley's been able to do with this team. I don't think anybody expected them to be as good as they were. The way I see it, I tend to agree with you. I think Creighton will end up the 3 seed and Providence will be the 4. Which makes for some interesting 5 seed.
I mean, basically, at the end of the day, in the tournament, they're all gonna
end
up having to play each other anyway.
This whole speculation is useless because in the tournament, it's gonna be an absolute bloodbath. tickets to this are well worth the price of admission, I'm sure, for the quarterfinal. I mean, quarterfinal games. How many conference tournaments do you go to where you have quarterfinal tickets and you're like, I'm going to get to see – I don't – because it's not even like the name recognition that matters. It's not like – oh, I'm going to see Providence versus Marquette. It's like these are two teams that are fighting to secure a NCAA tournament.
Let's just look at the NCAA tournament bubble right now. So So the second four in – so those are the right in front of the first four. And they're the last teams in that don't have to play one of those playing games. Seton Hall, Providence, and Marquette. So they're all on that list. And the last four in, we have Xavier. So four Big East teams are right there, either the last four in or the next four in, which is unbelievable. You know, like, you lose your first game in the Big East tournament, you're nervous.
Yeah.
Like, or you win a couple, you win your first game, maybe take down Nova or Butler or Creighton in the second game, you know, then you're feeling really good. You might even like slide up to an 8 or a 9 seed. So
you know what's unbelievable? If Xavier beats DePaul tomorrow, 7 teams will have finished with a 900 or better record in the Big East.
500?
500. Xavier is the only team that's below 500 right now that has a chance. That's insane. You could have 7 teams finish 9-9 in your conference. Exactly as you said, throw the seeds out the window.
Like, nothing, it doesn't
there
matter.
There is nothing separating these teams from 3 through 7 right now. I mean,
it's just all a matter of getting your players ready, getting them hype for the game, and, you know, coming out and playing hard. And, like, anything could, you know, decide these games.
Absolutely. You know, people talk about the ACC being, you know, one of the best conferences. It's probably the deepest. It just has more teams and more firepower. Yeah. But this might be the most fun and conference tournament to watch. I mean, It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be in the world's most famous arena. I really don't think there's no way to know what's going to happen. No. It's going to be something to behold, for sure. But we will continue our conversation about the Georgetown season when that tournament concludes. You know,
can't
who knows?
Wait.
Who knows? Rack off 4 wins. Boom! You're in the NCAA tournament if you're Georgetown. So I want to thank everybody for listening, as always. Nick, thank you for coming on with me again. Georgetown has one more game to salvage some sort of, I don't even know, pride in the season. They'll host the number 2 Villanova Wildcats.
Listen, it wouldn't surprise me if they won this game.
It really wouldn't surprise me if they won this game. And look, they have the talent. If they win, I'm not going to be like so shocked that they won. I think it's just the circumstances surrounding everything would make it a little bit harder to believe.
You know, Nova's already locked into the one in the Big East. I don't want to say they're locked into a one in the NCAA tournament, because obviously that could still go downhill, but they're pretty much a lock already. I mean, I don't know. You never know, but
we'll see how it goes. But thank you all for listening again. If you would like to follow us on any sort of social media, you can follow at GU Voice Sports on Twitter. That's the Georgetown Voice Sports' Twitter account. We live tweet all of the Georgetown men's basketball games, Georgetown's women's basketball games, and any other sport. We'll be there in Madison Square Garden for the Wednesday night game against St. John's. You can follow us along. We'll be providing play-by-play and post-game presser comments. If you want to follow the Voice Podcast Network on iTunes, you can follow it at Voice Podcast Network. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's at Tyler_Parre. That's P as in Paul, E-A-R-R-E. Nick, where can people follow you?
At Nick Gavio.
Easy enough. Nick Gavio there on Twitter. And we will see you all in about a week's time.
Thank you.
Thank you.